time is now 6 o'clock. Welcome to WORT's local news for Tuesday, March 19th. I'm your host, Christian Knudsen.
And I'm your host, Sarah Hopeful. In tonight's news, city planners hosted another more subdued public information meeting on Madison's draft West Area Plan.
On this first day of in-person absentee voting in the spring election, what are the constitutional amendments on the ballot?
We hear from two Dane County board candidates vying for a Wanakee area seat.
And we catch up on the latest construction projects on UW-Madison campus and learn more about the safe use of bird feed. This is Christian Knudsen and Sarah Hopeful with your local news, coming to you live from the WORT studios on Bedford Street in beautiful downtown Madison.
Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss has sharp words for those attempting to oust him from office. At a political lunch hosted this afternoon by WISPolitics.com, Voss lashed out at organizers of a recent recall effort, calling them, quote, whack jobs and morons and out of touch with reality. An initial review by the Wisconsin Elections Commission last week found that while organizers had submitted more than 10,000 signatures, not enough were valid to move forward with a recall. The commission found that signatures needed to be from residents who could have voted in what will soon be Voss's old district before the recent redistricting goes into effect for the November election. Organizers fell over 900 signatures short by that measure. The Wisconsin Elections Commission, though, is seeking clarity over which district boundaries to use in determining signatures for a potential recall. It has sent the issue to the Wisconsin Supreme Court, which has set a deadline of this Thursday to file briefs. Voss also told reporters today that his campaign hired a private investigator to check the validity of those petition documents, reports the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Meanwhile, the Racine County District Attorney announced an investigation into some two dozen of those signatures after allegations that some were forged.
Meanwhile, in other partisan legal tangles, the Wisconsin Supreme Court has agreed to hear a case that will determine if counties can be required to release certain voter records. This case stems from a lawsuit filed by the Wisconsin Voters Alliance, a group that is also sued for a variety of Republican talking points to invalidate absentee ballot drop boxes, ban private funding for election administration, stop, quote, illegal, unquote, voter registration, and to overturn President Joe Biden's victory in 2020. The group also sued Walworth County's Register and Probate in 2022, seeking records of voters deemed by a judge to be incompetent to vote. The Second District Court of Appeals ruled those records are public. That Walworth County official has asked the Wisconsin Supreme Court to review that ruling.
In media news, the nation's largest newspaper chain will stop running wire service stories next week. The change comes from the chief content officer of Gannett, who announced today that the publisher will stop running stories from the Associated Press starting next Monday. Gannett owns hundreds of daily and weekly newspapers across the country. It owns over a dozen in Wisconsin, including the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, the Green Bay Press Gazette, and the Wausau Daily Herald. The change comes as Gannett has been roundly criticized for years for its many rounds of staff layoffs and other resource cuts at papers across the country. The latest layoffs came last year when it eliminated roughly 2,700 jobs. That pullback from resources has left newspapers, particularly those that serve rural areas or places that would otherwise be a news desert, to depend more on wire services like the Associated Press to fill their papers.
Workers at another Madison-area Starbucks location have filed paperwork to unionize amidst another nationwide push to unionize baristas. This time, workers at the Eastside location on 1st Street and East Washington Avenue filed paperwork with the National Labor Relations Board. That action comes 4 weeks after another push from the union representing baristas, Starbucks Workers United. Employees at the Rimrock Road and Beltline Starbucks in Madison and the Monona Drive and Broadway Starbucks in Monona filed petitions to unionize last month. Two other Starbucks stores in Madison are already unionized, one on State Street and one on the Capitol Square.
And do you know what's on your ballot? Today marks 2 weeks from the April 2nd spring election, and today also marks the first day of early voting in Wisconsin. The hours for in-person absentee voting differs by where you live and your local clerk. In Madison, a variety of early in-person options are available at local libraries, on campus, and at community organizations. More information on Madison's hours and locations are available at cityofmadison.com/clerk. And more information about what's on your ballot is at My Vote Wisconsin. That's myvote.wi.gov. And those were tonight's headlines. And now, speaking of the spring election.
Yesterday, Madison City planners hosted a public information meeting about the draft West Area Plan. While a crowd voiced their opposition to the plan last week, virtual attendees have largely expressed their support for its ideas. WORT News producer Faye Parks has the latest.
This meeting focused in on potential sites for proactive rezoning, a key aspect of the draft West Area Plan that had some up in arms at last week's meeting. City planner Colin Punt opened the meeting by defining land use mapping, like the draft area plan, and zoning. According to Punt, these differences are important.
I think there's a lot of misinformation that has been going around about this. And so we're trying to start at the basics. So we have land use mapping, and this is a planning tool where we have kind of broadly categorized land uses mapped to more general areas. We're looking into the future. We're planning for the future. Now, zoning is more specific. If you want to change the zoning of your property, it has to be consistent with the generalized future land use map.
Punt detailed the five areas where city planners recommend proactive zoning in the draft West Area Plan. But while the plan recommends certain sites, proactive rezoning would still need to be implemented separately than the draft West Area Plan, and it would also be subject to approval by the Common Council. According to Punt, the proposed rezoning looks for ways to promote infill and residential connections to public transit as the city prepares for rapid growth. He says planners took the existing buildings of each area into account.
We try very hard to match up what is actually on the ground with a zoning district that is as close as possible to that.
Several attendees spoke in support of the draft plan. Matt Golick said he believes the plan could help mitigate the city's climate impacts.
We need to update zoning to make walkable, bikeable neighborhoods able to be built. And that's going to be allowing duplexes, small apartments, corner stores, cafes, those types of things pretty much everywhere.
Josh Posey also spoke in support, pointing to the city's housing crisis. However, he said he is concerned that the draft plan is actually too conservative.
I do live in Fitchburg and I would like to move back to Madison, but one of the reasons I'm in Fitchburg is because the housing simply doesn't exist in Madison like it does in the outer reaches.
According to Punt, the area plan opens up the possibility of more housing development, but it's difficult to predict the plan's impact in the future.
There's certainly space where enough development could occur that we could accommodate the people that will likely be wanting to move here. But it is very difficult to really look into our crystal ball and know exactly that.
Some attendees also spoke out against the plan, repeating last week's concerns that proactive rezoning merely serves developers. And Barry Pace, who lives in the Highlands, told city planners he does not feel the public feedback was being addressed appropriately.
We've informed you of a formal survey that had an 80% response rate amongst all the landowners, where 98% of the respondents said they would be against rezoning. And yet you've done nothing with it, as far as we know, other than you've given us the due process of listening to it.
But Punt explained that it's still too early to start making edits.
We are kind of in the process of taking in the feedback, and then we will make the changes to the draft.
The draft West Area Plan still has a long way to go before it reaches the Common Council, like taking public comment. The original deadline for public comment was tomorrow, but city planner Linda Horvath says they've extended that deadline.
We don't have a new deadline set yet, and we don't have the rest of the schedule set. We want to make sure that we hear from as many people as possible. And in fact, as many folks know, we've gotten quite a lot of press lately, and I think a lot more people are learning that the process is going on and want to jump in and get involved.
Horvath says the details on upcoming public information meetings and the new deadline for public comment will be added to the plan's webpage. A link to the Draft West Area Plan webpage will be included in the online version of this story. Reporting for WORT News, I'm Faye Parks.
A variety of races are on the ballot for the April 2nd election. Dane County Supervisor seats will be on the ballot, and tens of those races are competitive. And as you look over your absentee ballot, all Wisconsin voters will find two referendum questions on election administration. But what would they do? WORT reporter Lila Grubb has the context.
The first referendum on the spring ballot asks voters to create a constitutional amendment that would ban private donations and grants for primaries, elections, and referendums. If passed, election clerks could no longer use outside money to help fund the costs of running an election. Deborah Cronmiller is the executive director of the League of Women Voters in Wisconsin, which is firmly opposed to both referendums. Cronmiller says that this referendum could limit clerks who depend on outside funds to help run elections.
These grants that are coming from other sources really help the city or municipality to administer their elections at the highest possible level without having to dip into the pockets of their taxpayers to do so.
The amendment is a direct reaction to the 2020 election cycle when clerks scrambled to run effective elections during a pandemic lockdown. Specifically, the Republican-authored proposal is a continuation of a top right-wing talking point in 2020, Zuckerbucks. That's due to funding from the Center for Tech and Civic Life, a Chicago-based election reform advocacy group. In 2020, the group donated more than $8 million to hundreds of communities across Wisconsin to help fund increased election costs in the pandemic. Wisconsin's five largest cities got the largest share of the money, and Madison received roughly $1.5 million. When asked at the time what that money would go to, Madison Mayor Satya Rhodes Conway told WORT that would go
to assist us with putting on a healthy, safe and secure election during the COVID-19 pandemic. And that grant has gone to cover costs like the drop boxes and the additional costs for printing and mailing for absentee ballots.
Those absentee ballots were later banned by the state Supreme Court in 2022, though the court's new liberal majority has indicated that it will again take up the issue. Republican lawmakers have made the funding from the Center for Tech and Civic Life a right-wing talking point, saying that it helped to drive turnout in Democratic strongholds in a pivotal presidential election year. Nearly 4 years later, Capital Times reports that Madison has not yet spent its share of the money, even as a series of court cases in the state's election commission have found the funding legitimate. Meanwhile, the second referendum on April's ballot asks voters if election officials should have to be appointed by law. That includes poll workers, chief inspectors, and others who certify elections. Cronmiller says that those requirements already exist in Wisconsin's laws, but it could make them more permanent.
The language of the question is already in Wisconsin statute. It's not a change, particularly to what we have in statute. It would just be a codification of the statute in the Constitution.
Another stumbling block with the second question? There's no specific definition of election official in the state's constitution. Both referendums are constitutional amendments, which go through special processes to be added to the ballot. They first have to be approved in two consecutive sessions of the state legislature, then they head to the ballot. If approved, constitutional amendments are immediately enshrined in the same constitution and cannot be vetoed by the governor. Constitutional amendments also appear to be gaining popularity as Republicans hold the legislative branch and Democrats hold the executive branch. A report last fall from investigative news outlet Wisconsin Watch found that in the most relevant legislative session, lawmakers considered as many constitutional amendments as have been passed in about the last two decades. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reports that since 2020, 27 states have passed laws to prohibit, limit, or regulate the use of private election administration funding. Meanwhile, two more constitutional amendments are headed to the fall primary ballot this August. Reporting for WORT News, I'm Lila Grubb.
And we return this evening to another interview with a Dane County supervisor candidate in the spring election. District 25 represents Wanakee, and two candidates are vying for the seat, Mark Foster and David Betcher. The current supervisor, Tim Kiefer, is not running for another term. Earlier this week, Foster spoke to WORT News producer Faye Parks to discuss his priorities for the district.
Thank you for joining me, Mark.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
So to start, can you tell us a bit about yourself? What is your background and what political experience do you have?
So I have almost no political background at all. I've never done anything in politics. I have a heavy business background and leadership background. I owned my first small business at 17. And I went on to race motorcycles professionally for a little while, built a team around me back then. And I think early on in life, that really taught me how to be a halfway decent leader because everyone has to get along, right? Through that experience, I've just been in the private sector, mostly larger businesses ever since. Live in Wanakee. We've lived there since 2016. Absolutely love it. We love Dane County. We love Wisconsin. And in a nutshell, it's kind of why I'm running.
What brings you to the county board race? What are your main priorities for District 25?
So when I look at Dane County, I look at how much money that they control and how much spending they do. I often find myself questioning, like, how do we get here? What are some things going on within these programs that can be addressed to lower the tax burden on the people of Dane County? When we saw that 15% tax hike this past year, it made me really think, like, hey, you know, we owe it to the taxpayers to go back to the books. And I'm not saying, you know, completely shred all the programs we have in place, but I think we owe it to the taxpayers to look at these programs, look at the programs that are effective, leave them alone, maybe make them better. But more importantly, look at the programs that maybe aren't performing real well or need more assistance, or maybe we've outgrown them and we don't need them anymore and we can talk about closing them out. That's the main thing. The other thing, too, is when I look at politics, and this leverages my leadership experience, there's been so much divisiveness. You know, I feel like there's so many people in the middle that are afraid to raise their hand and say, hey, you know what? You're from the other side, but I like what you're saying, and I'm going to support that. Everybody's fallen in line, and that's really scary because I think it robs us as voters. It robs us as taxpayers. It robs us as community members when people just aren't open-minded. And that is the one thing that I think I do bring to Dane County is that I actually enjoy talking to people with different views than me. And the reason is I think it's a great opportunity to learn. If we're not listening to people with opposing views, we're not learning. And I respect that everybody has their own life journey, their own experiences, their own feelings. And those are real. We need to stop telling people they're not real. We need to respect that they're real. And then we need to work together to make sure we're addressing some of these larger fundamental things that even though one group may be experiencing it, if that group is experiencing it, I believe everybody is at a certain level. So we need to address those things and improve them for the better for everybody.
Are there any specific issues facing the county that you think are possible areas of compromise?
You know, I think spending, you know, just in general, I really feel strongly that we need to look at what we're doing. We need to make sure we slow down some of this unnecessary spending. And I'm not saying there is any one thing that's unnecessary because I haven't been in there and I haven't looked at the books real firmly. But I have to believe when you have a $1 billion budget, you have a billion opportunities to save. But the main thing for me, which is more Wanakee-centric, is the traffic that's coming through Wanakee. It's getting pretty crazy. Wanakee's being used as a shortcut, you know, between the two main highways. And I understand that, but I really want to preserve Main Street and that old town feel we have. We need to figure out a way to slow down some of that traffic and, more importantly, kind of try to find a way to de-incentivize people using it as a shortcut that are not using Wanakee as the destination. So I would say the roads and the lakes are really important to me.
So I know that criminal justice reform is a big talking point this year. What is your perspective on that?
Boy, that's tough. I do believe in law and order. I do believe that rules are in place for a reason. And I think that, you know, to have a safe, serene, successful neighborhood, you can't be afraid to pull up an intersection with your window down at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I think we need some attention there. We do need to address laws that are on the books. I think there should be fair justice when things happen. At the same time, I recognize that there's people who get sucked into that hamster wheel that have, you know, medical needs or, you know, there's other things going on, you know, whether it's, you know, mental health and whatnot. We've all had people affected by that. I would like to see more effort put towards mental health because I think there's a lot of people in jails, in prisons, that had they had the mental health attention they deserved and needed when they were younger, we probably could have circumvented that process.
So candidates across the county have also brought up affordable housing a lot. What is your perspective on that?
So, you know, I'm 53 years old. Most of my neighbors or a lot of my neighbors where I live, we have to be careful when we talk about this because they've rolled their retirements into their homes. So we have to be careful that we're respecting people's investments of their homes because they expect them to be stable or grow. And the one thing I don't want to do is do something in a community that lowers existing home values to where it hurts people financially and possibly puts them upside down in their houses. With that being said, I do understand that we do need affordable housing in communities where employment's robust. Wanakee's picked up some very large corporations, which is good for the community. Therefore, there's probably argument that we need, you know, more affordable housing in Wanakee. But I think we need to be really careful about how we roll that out and how we implement it. I like to see something of a graduation plan when we have low-income housing. And what I mean by that is instead of just having low-income housing and we put somebody in it, we say, hey, congratulations, you got in here. But if you do any better, you're going to lose these benefits. I would like to see us put an effort where we tie something in there for the workplace where we say, hey, you know, we're going to help you, whether it's subsidized or Section 8 or just, you know, lower income housing in general. But at some point, we need to get them participating in the workforce so that they can participate in free trade and get themselves out of that kind of assistance. I'm not a fan of perpetual low-income housing where people use it as a lifestyle instead of using it as a band-aid to get the help they need temporarily and get out. You know, I'd like to see more of a succession plan there for people that are capable of going out in the workforce and earning a decent wage.
So, meanwhile, Dane County Executive Joe Parisi's retirement is around the corner. What are your thoughts on that race?
Yep.
And if elected to the county board, how do you plan to handle that transition?
Now, I've read quite a bit about Joe Parisi and what he stands for. You know, I do think there'll be a gap in leadership for a while, but I really don't have, you know, one strong opinion on that one.
Okay, before I let you go, is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
You know, I'm just a regular everyday guy. I'm a calm communicator. And again, I like to learn from people. But the thing I want Wanneke to know is that, you know, I'm taking this very seriously. I've been at my place of employment for 15 years. I'm a senior leader here. When I take things on, I take them seriously and I try my best to be successful at it. But I'm really serious when I say it's a we campaign. We campaign is in W-E. I want to make sure that they know that I'll be accessible. I plan on communicating with the community members on a regular basis so that when things are presented in front of the board, I've already reached out to constituents and people in those communities to find out what's best for the community. Even though it maybe opposed my personal choices, that's what I'm not in there for. I'm not in there to drive my personal choices. I'm there to drive the people's choices.
Thank you again for agreeing to speak with me, Mark.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it, Faye. You have a nice day.
That was Mark Foster, one of two candidates running for the District 25 seat on the Dane County Board.
The time is now 6:33, and you're listening to the live local news on WORT. I'm Sarah Hopeful, here with Christian Knutson. Thanks for joining us. Before the break, we heard from Mark Foster, one of two candidates vying for the District 25 seat on the Dane County Board. We'll now hear from his opponent, David Betcher, who spoke with WRT News producer Faye Parks about his priorities earlier today.
Thank you for joining me, David.
Thanks for having me.
So to start, can you tell us a bit about yourself? What is your background and what political experience do you have?
I was on the Wanneke School Board for 9 years. Before that, I was a lobbyist for the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers representing Wisconsin. That was for about 10 years. During part of that time, I spent 3 years as a board member of the Wisconsin State Veterans Board, appointed by Governor Doyle at the time. I think that's most of the political experience.
What led you to run for Dane County Board? What are your priorities for District 25?
I've been in Wanneke for 25 years, and what I've seen there is basically growth. Wanneke has grown quite a bit during those 25 years. And while growth can be a good thing, it can also lead to problems. And within Wanneke, our biggest problem right now, I believe, is the traffic congestion that's happening on our Main Street. Main Street in Wanneke is Highway 19. And a lot of people use that to get from the east to the west side of the Madison area. And as such, that traffic's going right through town. It is a two-lane highway, and it's where a lot of our downtown businesses are. And that congestion is just nonstop all day long now. And as Wanneke and Dane County keep growing, that's just going to get worse. So I'd like to find a way to basically get that highway out of the middle of town. You know, a few years back, Verona had the same problem, and they moved the highway out of town. They have a big bypass now, and that really allowed their downtown to actually expand and provide more restaurant and shopping ability within the village. And I'd like to see that happen for Wanneke, too.
So that was actually an issue that your opponent mentioned to me as well. Are there any other issues facing Wanneke that you'd like to address?
Another thing we're seeing is that with the growth, there's always a question of how do you handle the property taxes and how do you handle the value of housing in your community? We all hear about affordable housing. Wanneke has a problem that, you know, is probably better referred to as workforce housing. We don't have housing in the lower levels of property value such that someone who has a standard 40-hour job, you know, maybe working at one of the small manufacturers in town, or, you know, we have Octopi and Lone Girl Brewing, but they pay, you know, in that $20 range. And all the housing in Wanneke is $400,000 plus. We need housing in Wanneke that workers can afford to live in so that those workers are there locally, because we don't have the transportation networks that, like, the city of Madison does. So we have to provide a way to get those different size of housing and values so that our workers can afford to live in the village.
And what are your priorities for the county as a whole? What are some main issues that concern you?
For the county as a whole, I think my experience in construction and public finance work, both at the Veterans Board and in the school district as a school board member, I've learned a lot about how public financing works and how the property taxes, ways you can deal with growth in a community that doesn't cause your property taxes to have to increase on individuals. When we did it at Wanakee, we were able to keep our property tax mill rate flat for many years by using those methods. And I'd like to bring that same thing to the Dane County Board. Last year, there was a 13% increase in the property tax rate, and that's just too high to be sustainable over time. So we have to use the growth of new properties, growth of new businesses, to pay for the growth we need to do in the budget. You mentioned my opponent, and he has mentioned about how he wants to have a flat property tax budget. That means you don't get to increase for the increased needs you have. Dane County is the fastest growing county in the state. When you have that kind of growth, you have more roads, you have more road maintenance, you've got to snowplow more. That all costs more money. But if you can do your property tax rate where the new community members, the new properties are paying for that increase, then everybody's current rate stays flat. And that would be my main goal on the board as a whole.
So I know that criminal justice reform is a big talking point this year. What is your perspective on that?
Overall, in criminal justice reform, I strongly support the idea of using counselors and social workers with police during some calls, rather than only armed officers showing up who may not have as good enough experience or the time or the knowledge to help people rather than just arrest people. And I think a lot of calls that we send officers to shouldn't just be with a loaded gun. If we can provide the mental health support on those calls, we can have a lot less people sitting in the jail.
Meanwhile, Dane County Executive Joe Parisi's retirement is coming up. What are your thoughts on that race? And if elected to the county board, how do you plan to handle that transition?
I think the most important part about transitions like that, I was in the military for 28 years, and I saw a lot of high-level executive transitions, and I was part of some of those, both myself being the person transitioning and working with people who were transitioning. And when it comes to executive transitions, the biggest part is having the history and the staff and support behind it to help that person move through. No one walks into a job perfectly knowing everyone and everything. I will say that the nice thing about some of the candidates I've seen running is they do have background with the county board. They're not going to walk into it never having been there before. And I think that's an important trait. You know, when you look at Melissa Agard, she was on the board for a long time. You look at some of the other candidates, our board members, or at least city council members in the region. So that will help somewhat. As a board member, I think our strongest ability is to help that executive by giving them the resources, the knowledge, and experience to rely on and help them as they start making their first decisions.
All right, before I let you go, is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
I think the biggest thing I'd like to share is the fact that I think Wanakee is a great community. I've loved being there. Everybody moves there because of the wonderful schools it has. And I think the biggest thing we can do is, no matter how these elections turn out, is to always realize that at the county level, the things Wanakee needs, whether it's the new road ability and everything, is we have to work with the communities around us. Wanakee can't do it alone. I think I bring that experience by having the endorsements of almost every elected official all the way up through the state level, Mark Polkan and others, and I can bring that experience and those resources from federal and state level to help us fund those projects so it's less of a burden on the county. And my relationship and support from, like, the former administrator of Westport and everything will allow us to get the surrounding communities to work together on a project like this that will benefit Wanakee.
Thank you again for agreeing to speak with me, David.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for your time.
That was David Boettcher, one of two candidates vying for the District 25 seat on the Dane County Board, representing Wanakee. The current supervisor, Tim Kiefer, is not running for another term. We heard from Boettcher's opponent, Mark Foster, earlier in the show. Foster and Boettcher will face off on April 2nd.
Every Tuesday, we bring you Cardinal Call, which features campus news coming out of UW-Madison from journalists at the Daily Cardinal Student Newspaper. This week, host Oliver Gerhartz talks with Daily Cardinal reporter Malia Langer about five major construction projects on campus.
Hello and welcome to Cardinal Call, your weekly dose of UW-Madison campus news from the Daily Cardinal student newspaper. I'm your host, Oliver Gerhartz. As of late, the area around the UW-Madison campus has been such a hotbed for construction that it's hard to get from point A to point B without skirting around a closed sidewalk or hearing the sounds of something getting torn down or put up. Today we're joined by Daily Cardinal reporter Malia Langer to discuss her article on five of the largest and most impactful current and upcoming construction projects on campus. Malia, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So what are the projects that you focused on in your story?
So I talked about the School of Computer Data and Information Sciences, Irving and Dorothy Levy Hall, the new engineering building, the demolition on Lake Street, and the redevelopment there, and then Cronsage, Humphrey, and Jorn's Resident Hall renovations.
So to start with the big one, where is Levy Hall going to be?
So that is going to be right across from the business school on Park and West Johnson.
So a lot of programs are going to be moving into Levy Hall.
Yeah. So the programs that are going to be in that hall are African American Studies, Gender and Women's Studies, History, Jewish Studies, Religious Studies, American Indian and Indigenous Studies, Asian American Studies, and Chicana and Latina Studies.
So a lot of stuff moving out of the Moss Humanities Building.
Yeah.
So that building is currently sort of, there's ambitions to demolish it.
Yeah, it's really crumbling and there's a lot of issues with it functionally.
Are those plans set in stone in really any way yet?
They have not been. I feel like there are just rumors about Moss being demolished. I'm sure they will do that in the future. But I spoke with Lori Wilson, and she said that all those types of projects need to be submitted as a part of UW-Madison's six-year capital development plan, which would be approved by the Board of Regents and then the state.
So a lot of people have to check off on that coming down.
Yeah, definitely.
To move on to the School of Computer Data and Information Sciences. So where's that located?
That is right near Union South on the corner of Orchard and University.
So kind of a big new educational building. What programs are going to be moving in there?
So in September 2019, the College of Letters and Science created the School of Computer Data and Information Sciences within it. And that is what will be located in that building.
So construction's already started on this project. When is the project expected to be complete?
That one is expected to be completed by 2025.
To move on to the new engineering building, is that are any programs going to be moving into that, or is it sort of more of a scaling up of the current facility?
That's definitely going to be scaling up the current facility in a new location, and it's going to be able to allow the College of Engineering to admit around 1,000 new engineering students.
So construction has not really started on that yet. It's really still in the works, isn't it?
Yeah, the funding just got approved for it, and they're still raising money.
Can you talk a little bit about where the funding for that's coming from?
So the governor approved $197 million in funding, and the building itself is expected to cost a total of $347 million, and they need to fundraise the rest of that.
So yeah, that funding for the engineering building was in exchange for the cutting of a lot of DEI positions. To move on to the Lake Street Garage, doesn't that seem kind of, it seems ambitious, the list of things. Could you talk to me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, they're planning on inner city bus terminal, public parking, retail, as well as housing, which I think will be very great for the area. I'm honestly not totally sure how they're going to fit all of that in that space, but it seems like it'll be great.
I mean, that seemed crazy to me too, but then I remembered that Lucky is just a few blocks away, and that has kind of also a ton of stuff in the same way.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, obviously, the university is always needing more student housing, so.
And so with that just being torn down, I mean, is there even a timeline yet?
They think that it's going to be finished in the fall of 2026, according to the city of Madison.
So to talk about the last on the list, that is the residence hall renovations in Cronsage, Humphrey, and Jorns. What kind of renovations are they making?
They're planning on putting in AC and heating systems and renovating the lounges.
So how much is that going to cost?
The renovations will cost approximately $80 million.
Wow, just for the residence halls. How much is all of these projects going to cost? How much is that all looking at put together?
Like all combined?
Yeah.
Well, hundreds of millions of dollars.
That seems about right. I mean, there are five pretty huge and ambitious programs. So which of these construction projects do you think is going to be the most helpful, both sort of to the university as a whole, but also to you personally?
I think the new Levy Hall is definitely going to be like huge in the sense that I feel like a lot of majors and programs within the College of Letters and Science don't have as nice of educational buildings compared to, for example, chemistry building or now this new computer data and information science building. So I think that that'll really draw a lot of people in for those majors and make it more appealing to, you know, go to classes and learn.
What about personally?
Personally, I mean, definitely along those lines too. Like, I mean, I'm a journalism major, so I would definitely I would definitely have classes in that building. And it's just nice to be in a new space with new features and yeah.
So was there anything else that you learned over the course of your reporting that kind of stuck out to you?
I think just like how much is going on is really impressive all at the same time. And that the university is able to keep up with it. It's definitely like a little bit inconvenient for students. There's some disruptions and, you know, noises and, you know, new routes to class. But I think that's an exciting time for the university to see all these new buildings coming up.
So it's all going to be worth it.
I hope so.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on this week, Malia.
Thank you for having me.
In other campus news, over half of the department chairs for the College of Letters and Sciences signed a letter advocating paid family and medical leave for university employees. The university currently has no paid family or medical leave policy. In response to the letter, a UW-Madison spokesperson said the Chancellor of UW-Madison is committed to offering paid parental leave. In campus sports news, Badger women's tennis has extended its winning streak to 7 games. The team defeated Purdue and Indiana in their first Big Ten matchups of the season, winning back-to-back on Saturday and Sunday. In other UW system news, the Board of Regents appointed James Beebe as the new chancellor of UW La Crosse, an appointment which will go into effect this July. Beebe's appointment comes following a 3-month span since the Board of Regents fired his predecessor Joe Gao in December. This has been the Cardinal Call, created by UW-Madison student journalists. Check out more news and stories at dailycardinal.com.
Bird feed, if not selected thoughtfully, can actually harm your neighborhood's wildlife, and it can even hurt the health of your beloved household pets. On tonight's Wildlife Weekly, Jackie Sandberg explains what to know about bird feed.
Welcome to Wildlife Weekly. My name is Jackie Sandberg, and I'm the Wildlife Program Manager for the Dane County Humane Society here in Madison, Wisconsin. Each week, we choose a topic related to wildlife rehabilitation or the environment, and today I wanted to share a little bit of information about grape and raisin and current toxicity in some species. And when I'm talking about some species, really I'm talking about dogs, which would include canids. So for wildlife rehabilitators, that might mean foxes and coyotes. So in Wisconsin, we're thinking about red fox, gray fox, and then our coyotes. But there could be other species that are affected by this as well. So the reason I wanted to talk about it today was because we have had an early migration of birds. I know that there are rehabilitators in the northern part of our state that have been getting migratory songbirds early or seeing them, or even some of the earlier migrants like robins tend to stick around and will sometimes move further north when there's nice weather. Well, as you know, it's probably been pretty cold this week, and we've had dropping temperatures below freezing again. And so there have been, sharing of posts and suggestions about what to put out for birds during time periods where, you know, they might be dealing with a frozen ground, like when the robins are trying to get redworms. That doesn't really work very well for them. So if they potentially have a risk of starving during a period where we have a cold snap, hopefully it's not too long, but if it was prolonged, it's not great for them to have to starve since they usually have come from already a long distance migration, so their fat reserves are really low. So the suggestions are to put out pieces of suet, so you can either do that in little bits or nuggets, or you can actually just put the whole block of suet out in a feeder. You can buy those at any of your local bird stores or, you know, farm stores or even like a Walmart. Most kind of regular retail places do have some bird feeders or suet feeders available for purchase, or you can order them online. We also have lots of different types of fruits that they can eat, which would be things like apples. We recommend blueberries, raspberries, blackberries. the only thing that we really ask people to stay away from is grapes or raisins. And that's because grapes and raisins, and we'll also include currants into this, but I think not as many people would put out currants regularly outside. We would say avoid that because of the toxicity that it could cause for our wild canids or for your pets at home. And since we work as a humane society together that have different programs, including our wildlife center, we work with companion animals, dogs, cats, critters, and equine. I think it's a really important message to get out there. And unfortunately, according to the VCA Animal Hospitals, which you can definitely check out their website, they have a great article on toxicity of these types of fruits. There's not really a known toxic amount or dose or, you know, how many per dog, how many per fox or something can they eat before they're going to run into problems with their kidneys. It's been studied, but it's really still up in the air about what really causes it. So kidney failure can occur after eating maybe one or two raisins or a grape, or it could be a couple, or it could be over a little bit of time. But typically, the toxicity has been attributed to things like a mycotoxin, which is a toxic substance that's produced by a fungus or a mold, a salicylate, like an aspirin-like type of drug that might be naturally found in grapes, and then that decreases blood flow to the kidneys. According to the VCA, they do say that recently they have studied more about the tartaric acid that might be the cause, but as far as the articles have been published and written, there's not really a specific agent that has been 100% attributed to this type of toxicity. But within about, you know, 24 to 48 hours, you know, you could have a toxic overdose from your own pet by putting it out at the base of a tree for birds if your dogs are out roaming around. Or again, if you have fox or other critters that are visiting the feeder, again, we just say a word of caution. This isn't for all species. This is just something, again, that we're talking about when we think of canids. So sure, for birds, you might be just fine. For your squirrels, you might be just fine. But it's something to think about when you are putting out those foods and thinking, oh yeah, this will be great for so many species. Well, don't forget that there are some other species that could be affected as well. So, you know, you usually want to look for signs that if, let's say, your pet did end up getting some kind of poisoning from grapes or raisins, you're looking for vomiting, you're looking for lethargy. These are all kind of nonspecific, unfortunately, but you're looking for problems where, you know, the animal does not want to eat at all. If they have really gotten to that point of lack of appetite, or, you know, bad breath, diarrhea, abdominal pain, super, super thirsty. Those are all acute signs, but 20 to 48 hours later, you could have kidney damage, and it's not really easy for them to recover from that because the kidneys aren't good at repairing themselves. So they could have permanent damage, and it could ultimately lead to death if not treated. So it's something that you definitely want to contact your veterinarian about, get them into emergency care, critical care, if you know for sure that your dog has eaten raisins or grapes. And again, looking at, you know, what's happening out in the environment, if you have foxes regularly visiting your area, maybe you have a trail camera outside and you see them coming every night to, you know, your yard, those would be the situations where I would not put out grapes or raisins under my tree during this time period, just to help the other species out as well. So something like blueberries or raspberries are definitely going to be safer. And the birds are also going to really love that too. So just something to think about, something that could be avoided. We do work with a lot of fox at Dane County Humane Society's Wildlife Center. We have one currently that's in treatment for sarcoptic mange. So it was on our minds as we were thinking about what to put out for our birds during this cold snap. So choose some other fruits. Note that seeds can sometimes be a food for some birds and not others. And then otherwise, suet is just absolutely great. Maybe some shelled sunflower. You can even do some scrambled eggs. So there's a bunch of different things you can do safely. Just try to avoid the raisins and the grapes. So that is today's segment on WORT here, talking about our toxicities in canids or dogs from grapes, raisins, and currants. And if you have any questions about any of these types of topics, or you believe your animal is sick, if it's your dog or cat, please talk to your veterinarian right away. But otherwise, if you have a sick fox or coyote in your area, give us a call at 608-287-3235. Thanks for listening here on WORT. This has been Wildlife Weekly.
And that does it for our show. Thanks for listening to WORT's Live Local News at 6.
Your reporter tonight was Lila Grubb.
Special thanks to feature contributors Jackie Sandberg and Oliver Gerhars.
Super Dave Lawrenson engineered the show.
Faye Parks produced this newscast.
And Charlie Pittman is the news director at WORT. I'm your host, Sarah Hopeful. Stay up to date with the WORT Local News podcast and subscribe at your preferred directory for podcasts.
And I'm your host, Christian Knutson. Up next is Spanish language news with Nuestro Patio. Good night.